Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Right Now Weekly Radio Show, hosted by Vicki Winterton, founder of Expert Insights Publishing, home of best-selling books, award-winning magazines, global broadcasts and communities. Right Now is a highly educational, inspiring, and empowering show focused on writing, publishing, and marketing your books, featuring outstanding guests from across the globe, including best-selling authors, world stage speakers, thought leaders, and visionaries with proven strategies, secret formulas, and treasured resources to help you succeed and make an impact. Welcome, sit back, and enjoy the show. And now your host, Vicki Winterton.
Hi, this is Vicki Winterton, and I'm thrilled today because with me I have author and extraordinary person in the financial realm, Michael Angelo Costa. Michael is a lawyer and investment banker who has over 33 years of international business experience. He has held senior executive positions with two of the largest global investment banks and was a partner at one of the world's largest advisory firms. Michael is also an author, and he'll be talking with us today about his new book. And he's a frequent lecturer to industry groups on numerous topics, including optimization of organizational and personal decision-making. He lives in Hillsborough Beach, Florida, with his wife, Claudia, and their dog, Bosco. Welcome, Michael.
Thank you, Vicki. I'm glad to be here.
I am so thrilled that you are with us. You have accomplished so much, and I would love if you would share a little bit about that with us, but also share with us what brought you to the passion and the purpose of what you're currently contributing to the world.
Well, I thank you very much. I don't know what I'm contributing to the world so far, but I'd like to continue to contribute going forward. I wrote this book when I had an epiphany. I'm not sure what triggers an epiphany, because once you have it, that aha moment, you think, why did I have it before? But I know it was my role as an investment banker. I was giving a presentation to a board of directors of a publicly traded company. And on the way out to the West Coast, I reviewed their resumes, and they all had stellar resumes, smart people. And I got to the boardroom, presenting a transaction that I was very, very familiar with. It was my deal. I gave a 20-minute presentation and answered their questions, and I thought it went well. And then they decided to have a caucus to discuss whether to go forward or not, and they let me stay in the room. And three people around me came to three different conclusions. Even though two people wanted to do the deal, it was for different reasons. One person was against it. And I was stunned that these three very well-educated people were just kind of making this up as they went along. I had anticipated some intellectual rigor to the decision-making process, and they didn't have one. And then it dawned on me that even though I knew this deal cold, what if I didn't? What if it was an important decision, but outside of my realm of expertise? How would I go about making a decision? I don't know. I didn't have a decision-making process either. Now, I'm more of an intuitive person. When I take a Myers-Briggs test, I'm not linear, and process sounds so linear. But I said, this can't be the right answer. It can't be the right answer that all these smart people don't have a way of figuring out the right answer. So I embarked on a 10-year journey reading academic journals, you know, reading books and interviewing hundreds and hundreds of people, mostly in corporate America at the C-level suite, and finding out how they go about making decisions, and I could pick the best way. What I found was that the people don't have decision-making process either individually or at the corporate level. So everything was a variation of this theme. When I asked them how they went about making a decision, they said, we consider all the best options and choose the best one. Well, you can't argue with that. That's like saying, that's a truism. That's what you want. But the analogy I make is if I want to be a coach of a college team or a professional team, and I interview for the job, I go to the ownership or the board, and I say, I would like the job. I'm going to score more points than our opponent every game. They go, that's great, Mike. You've just defined winning. You've defined what winning is. It's scoring more points than the other team. But the important thing, Mike, is how do you plan on doing that? Well, saying I'm going to consider all the options and choose the best one is the same thing as saying I'm going to score more points than the other team. You described the object of decision-making. You haven't told me how you're going to get there. Now, when I first met Leslie, who was recommended to me by people that are very well published in household names, she sat down with me and said, well, what kind of book is this? And I described it. It's a book about decision-making. And she goes, no, what category? And I didn't know. And she said, I think it's a how-to book. And I said, what's a how-to book? And she said, it's like a cookbook. Well, I was offended. I put a lot of gray matter into this thought process when I was rewriting. And this is not just, you know, a tab of butter, some sugar, whip it up. But she was right. It's a how-to book. And when I was writing the book, I started giving presentations to mostly corporations and mostly financial ones. But the feedback was consistent. They were more interested in decisions that affected their personal lives than ones that affected the company. And so as I went through that, I said, well, the process should be the same, whether it's a finance issue, a merger and acquisition, or the decision to get married or not, or play the lottery or not. So I have in the book now examples, and almost none of them relate to business now. I'd say I have one or two examples on business. The rest are really personal things. And that's where I started. So my goal is to, you say, how can I tell people? They didn't come to me for advice. I don't want to make the decision for them. I'm willing to. That's called a consulting arrangement or a speaking arrangement, and I can get paid for that. But I really want to empower them to make better decisions. I view this as you have a great computer. The greatest computer in the world is one you own, Vicky. It's not the laptop, it's your brain. And your brain works at a certain speed and certain capabilities that I can't replicate. But I want to take this book and these thoughts as a software patch, a software application that you can use to help your brain come to a better decision when the decision matters. And so I've broken the book into three parts, basically. The first part of the book is my own words, but not my original research. I've aggregated research in academic journals and publications of how people go about making decisions today. What are the subconscious forces that pull us in the wrong direction a lot of the times? And I like to write in a style that is easy to understand. So, for example, you know, Ron Burgundy is a movie character played by Will Ferrell. And I have lessons from Ron Burgundy in the book, about a couple of pages. And in this character is Ron Burgundy. Will Ferrell did some commercials for Chrysler. And Chrysler's sales went up by 59% in a month. It didn't have more fuel efficiency. It wasn't a brand new car. It wasn't higher rated safety. It was solely because people liked Will Ferrell playing in character as Ron Burgundy. Now, that just doesn't apply to people that buy Chryslers. That same decision process applies to people if you buy a Tesla or a Mercedes. It's the same thing. So that's the first part of the book, to kind of inoculate you from the common mistakes. The second part of the book is going through the four-point framework that I developed, which is timing, balance, probabilities, and pattern recognition, and walking through each one of those separately in what I mean by that and what's the best way of going about it for any decision. And the last part of the book, I applied the four concepts to things from the mundane, like decision to play the lottery or not, things that are important like marriage, medical decisions, etc. So I have about 10 examples that I go through. And I apply the same process, and you can see where I come out in a conclusion. And that, to me, is where I want people to view the book as a user-friendly way to come to better conclusions on their own, without my help in a consultation or a speaking engagement, although I'm not above speaking engagements and consultations. So that's really the core part of the book, and I want people to use it to reach whatever goals they want to reach.
That is so incredible. And, you know, as our world gets busier and more congested, I think decision-making becomes more difficult. If you could share with us, what is the title of the book? And also, if you could share with us what you think the book presents that are maybe some of the biggest challenges that we face today in making decisions as individuals.
Well, first, the book title is Never Be Wrong Again.
And I love it. I love it.
People like it, but I want to explain what I mean by that because I back it up. We have, where you're wrong, you can make a great decision, and you have a 90% chance of the outcome coming the way you want it to be. So you have a goal and you want to reach there. You have a 90% chance of success. By definition, you have a 10% chance of failing. And that could be the best decision. You can't guarantee the outcome. What you can guarantee is never being wrong again. And the only time you're wrong is when you don't get the outcome you wanted to, and looking back, you say, I should have known, because here's why I should have known not to do that thing. And that's when you're wrong. That's when your decision-making process is wrong. But going back to your question and what people do today, I can summarize the first part of the book very simply. Our technology has sped up. Our physiology hasn't changed. So if you remember the movie The Men in Black, these very smart people, the Archilians, I think they were called, were actually in human bodies, but they're very small people. And the theory is in all sci-fi things that going forward we'll have small bodies, we'll have really big brains, and we'll be very smart. But the human being, which is part of the animal kingdom, hasn't changed greatly since we were out hunting in the jungle and farming on the grasslands. Really haven't changed much. So what the conflict is here is that the need for decision-making has sped up, but the way we do it hasn't changed at all. So we've gone from the automobile and fax and large cell phones to things that we can do to stay connected, and things that go at the speed of light, and we've increased our weapon systems in the world for efficiency. But our decision how to use those things hasn't changed at all, and that's the biggest gap I see.
That is a huge gap. And so how, just briefly, would you give people some tips about how to bridge that gap, or at least start bridging that gap?
Well, I think, you know, I wouldn't use my format for every decision you have to make. Most of the decisions you make every day are in your area of expertise and or just don't matter. What I mean is the cost of being wrong. Should you wear white jeans or blue jeans? It just probably doesn't really matter that day.
Right.
And that's useful because when you think, really think about things, you burn off a lot of glucose. And as animals, we have a natural aversion to doing that. So, for example, if you went to college, you studied for a standardized test, like let's say the SAT. In 3 hours that day, you were concentrating, thinking. And you came out and you were just exhausted. And they say, Vicky, you look exhausted. You go, no, I'm not physically exhausted. I'm just, you know, it's just my brain. No, you actually burnt off a lot of glucose. So you actually are physically depleted at that point. So we have a tendency to avoid that because it's not very efficient. So most of the times you do things in a very efficient way, and we kind of just go with our gut reaction, and that's the proper way to do things when the outcome is not that important. Now when the outcome is important, you say, I'm going to think about it, and I would say, how are you going to think about it? And there's a common phrase that there's two types of thinking, thinking lightly and thinking deeply. It's like when you're thinking lightly, you don't have a plan, and your mind is whirring around with the same thoughts you had before, but nothing really new. I call it, you know, thinking lightly, or people say you think you're thinking when you're not really thinking. But when you really need to think, you got to have the energy and you need a plan to do it, and that's why I think the book adds value. And that's where I would suggest is just setting aside which decisions are really important to me and which one I need to focus on. And you'll be able to know, and there's two ways you need to do this. One, you're outside of your area of expertise. Let's say you're a skilled cardiologist. You're brilliant. You're the number one cardiologist in the world. That doesn't mean with all the money you make, you know how to invest it. Investing is a separate area of expertise. Number two, people have a tendency to, if I'm a tax lawyer, which is my background originally, if I write an opinion letter for somebody on tax worth $1 million, I just do that because it's in my area of expertise. If someone wants the same opinion, but it's a $10 billion transaction, I'm going to ask for a second pair of eyes. Why? The stakes are much higher. Even though it's my area of expertise, the stakes are much higher. So there's two reasons you want to think you can screw up. The stakes are high, or you're out of your area of expertise. And our expertise is actually much more narrow than we'd like it to be. Being smart is an attribute, like being tall is good in basketball. Being smart, having a high IQ is good. It's not an area of expertise. It's an attribute that helps you process things better than the next person, but that's not an area of expertise. So that's where I think the focus has to be.
Mm, that is absolutely brilliant. Just so, so powerful. So when you think about the book and you think about the work that you're doing around this, what would you like to see this have an impact on the world? If you were almost looking at it like a legacy, how would you like to see this really have global impact?
Well, first of all, I'm going to remember that question because that's a great question, and I'm going to tell you why. I view things differently now. When I went to law school, when you graduate law school, you start seeing the world differently than most non-lawyers. After researching this book and writing it, I view decisions differently than most people. So it not only can help you at the kitchen table and the board table, it can help 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue. There are things that have happened over the last couple of presidents, so it doesn't matter which party you're for, et cetera, that I can see when they're doing something, before I know the result, I can say, that's a mistake. That's bad decision-making. And by the way, they have access to a lot of smart people, and they're smart people themselves. So getting a lot of smart people in the room is a big advantage to having one person. Having them be experts in the field is great, but a lot of people without a plan does not equal a plan. So I could view, I'm trying to stay non-political here, how about this one? I viewed some legislation that's come out in the last several years as bad or good just on decision-making, nothing to do with politics, nothing to do with would I vote for the person, not vote for the person, just on decision-making. And I'd like people to take that even globally because we have people making decisions every day that impact us. Now, I mentioned before quickly that what's happened between us and 500 years ago is now we have most countries have weapons that are very powerful and very fast and unfortunately too easy to use. But our decision-making process hasn't changed. And that's where I think the greatest thing I can do is have the decision-makers apply a good decision-making process. Because, quite frankly, if I make a bad decision today in my house that impacted, I make a bad investment decision, it impacted me and maybe my family and hopefully not that much. It didn't impact you. It didn't impact people in the country. It didn't impact anybody in Greece or France or Russia. But these other people that make decisions that impact people, if you lead a company and you make a bad decision, a lot of bad decisions, you've got to lay off 25,000 people. You impacted 25,000 households that didn't have to be that way. If you're running a country and you decide to go to a war you shouldn't be in or you're doing it the wrong way, you're impacting millions and millions of people when you didn't have to. So that's the one thing if you ask me what I'd like to have as a legacy, is that people apply, a plan on decision-making for the big things, including on a global and per-country basis.
That, again, is so powerful. And I'd love to know, Michael, how do you estimate, just give us a couple points about how you estimate if a person that maybe has some influence over you is making a bad decision?
Well, that's you have to be skilled at interpersonal skills like yourself. It's no problem. What you do is you don't tell them they're wrong. You ask them, have they considered this? Or what about that possibility, et cetera. that's what you try and do. You try and take them through the process without telling them you're teaching them something. You know, I can't teach somebody something if they don't want to listen. If I make it so I'm not teaching them, we're having a conversation, like we are here, they can listen and they can learn something. Again, the best scenario is not for me to tell them what I would do. It's for them to utilize the power of their own brain, their own personal computer they carry with them every day of their lives, to come to their better conclusions. And it's worked for me. For example, and this happens on a stock sale I made today. All right, I will tell you that in the last 7 days, I bought and sold Tesla stock twice. And I made a 3.6 rate of return in 5 days, and I annualized 180% return. It's fabulous. Now, in the book, I tell you that I beat almost all the hedge funds, publicly traded hedge funds, through my investing. I didn't read one more book. I didn't take one more finance course. I didn't do anything differently but follow my own advice in my book. And the biggest thing that I did is I have a profit target on investing. When I buy Tesla stock at 196, I know when it goes to 201, for example, I'm selling. I don't know if it went to 210 today. I don't care. I lock in my profit. That's just an example of investing. But you take that. What I want to do is I don't want to lecture people on investing. I don't want to lecture people on getting married or not. I don't want to lecture people on whether they should play the lottery or not. I want them to start thinking of how to apply it to their fact pattern so we can all, they can have a better life and we can all have better lives.
I love it. That is so beautiful. So time has just flown with you, Michael, but I know people will want to learn more. First of all, I know your book is available on Amazon.com. Please give us once again the name of your book, and also if you have a website where people might be able to connect with you.
Yes, the book is Never Be Wrong Again, and the website is neverbewrongagain.com. And also, I have a Facebook page and Twitter account. But those, I would say the website, neverbewrongagain.com, would be probably the first stop.
I love it. And I love the title of the book, Never Be Wrong Again. Everyone wants that for themselves and for those that they care about. So, Michael, thank you so much for being here with us and for this tremendous contribution you're making through the book, because I know that you consult to some of the top people in the world, and now you're making the information that you have available to the world through your book, and it's the biggest gift anyone could give in my estimation. So thank you so much for that contribution.
Well, thanks for having me.
Oh,
really appreciate the opportunity to speak with you.
My pleasure. And for all of those out there listening, thank you all for joining us. And if you would like to learn more about Expert Insights Publishing, our best-selling books, award-winning magazines, and global broadcasts and networks, you can find us at getei.com. That's GETEI.com. And everyone have a wonderful week.